jump in
They do
again.
it
Charlie,
again.
Are you
take
sure?
two.
No, never.
Take 127. Welcome to Rated Gen X. I'm Gabe.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Curtis.
And we're three very ageless Gen X kids, and each week we visit the multiplex of our mind
to watch an 80s film through a modern lens.
So, Erin, remind us what we're watching today.
All right, so we are headed back to high school with 1989's Heathers.
Right.
And I'm so excited. Woo. This is my choice. That's why I get to talk right now. You guys have to shut up. Because it's my film and I chose it. And I chose it because I just think I love dark humor. I love, love, love. Yeah, I really like the dark, as much as I don't like horror, I like that darker side. This is really kind of like I love John Hughes movies, but this is the anti John Hughes. I would say, and that's how Daniel Waters meant it to be, the anti John Hughes, or the antithesis of the John Hughes. And I think I really like that Winona is kind of experiencing kind of a recognition now. I think she was great in this movie. I think she is deserving of the recognition she's getting in Stranger Things and having sort of a comeback in that. I think there's a lot of attention right now. I know there's a lot of attention right now on sort of, there was this, that period of time where, you know, she had that, she was going through a lot of mental health struggles. She had the shoplifting thing and she was treated really unfairly. And I think that's being given some attention. So I kind of would like to, take an opportunity to visit this movie on our podcast and give her the props she deserves for her performance. Mm. And I'm really looking forward to it. Have you guys seen it before? Yeah.
I vaguely remember seeing, I haven't seen it in so long, but I do remember in college, there was a certain sorority that was like sort of the popular girl sorority. And every time I'd go there, like with friends that were members for lunch or something in the living room, they had Heathers on constantly on a loop. And it was like, it was sort of like they looked at the bitchy girls as kind of like their heroes to emulate, the same way like a couple guys I knew like looked at Gordon Gekko from Wall Street as the hero. It's sort of like the Archie Bunker effect, you know.
That's a little scary.
Yeah, like you'd think it would teach people that like being that way is an asshole, but it just emboldened them to be, you know, like, yeah, rooting for those guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I remember like the phrases like what's your damage was a thing. And I remember like friends of mine would be like, dude, I don't want to play your reindeer games. And I forgot that was like part of our little court language, but that was all from Heathers.
Yeah, so full.
Actually, you just reminded me of that was the case, because I didn't realize that either. And that's a term I use all the time.
Lines like reindeer games. Did you have a brain tumor for breakfast? Fuck me gently with a chainsaw. Like,
yeah.
Just lots of lines like that really stand out. It's a pretty remarkable piece of writing.
I remember Christmas time I put little reindeer horns on my dog and took a picture of him and put it on Instagram and wrote, he does not want to be part of your reindeer games. So it's, you know, right. And I didn't even know I was referencing Heathers at the time. So it's very cute. All right. The burning question is going to be, this episode is going to be the lunchtime poll. We're changing it. All right. And if you haven't seen the movie, then you need to just watch it and you'll get what that means. So, okay. So that is going to be, so Heathers now is a musical, which is kind of crazy. And a lot of movies have become musicals. What is there an 80s movie that you think should be a musical? So that's my lunchtime poll.
Does it have to be an 80s movie, or can it be from any time?
Actually, you know what? Let's open it up to everything, because yeah, I think that makes it a little easier. I'm not going to put that restriction. It doesn't have to be 80s movie. It can be anything.
Problem is, I don't know if there's any 80s movies left that haven't been made into musicals. So
that's true. That's true.
Choices are limited right now. There's only around six or seven left. So
All right, great. So we're going to go ahead and
watch Heathers.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah. All right, we'll see you after the break.
Hey, Gen X podcast fam. Are you an aging Gen Xer like me, just trying to be cool enough that your kids don't totally clown you on with a TikTok fit check for wearing Voorhees kicks out to dinner in Vegas? Have I got the solush for you? It's the Cool Dad Fashion app. Here's how it works. Take a full fit selfie in front of a standing mirror and let the app do the rest. With feedback like, no, that's so cringe, and they're called mom jeans, dad, and did you order that shirt using a flip phone? You'll be kicking your socks and sandals to the curb and killing it with fire kicks in no time. Say goodbye to ick and hello to low-key digging the vibe drip with the Cool Dad Fashion app. Individual results may differ. Cool Dad Fashion app is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Cool Dad Fashion app is designed for dads of teenagers and should not be used by creepy dudes with bad ideas looking to book a guest spot on To Catch a Predator. Use only as directed. Let's face it, if you're over 18 and you're dressing to impress a 7th grader and you're not a fashion challenge dad who still dresses like Lloyd Dobler, you're totally sus.
Before we get to Heather's, let's revisit the lunchtime poll we talked about on the way in. What movie do we think would make a great musical adaptation? Curtis, what is your burning question for the lunchtime poll?
A great musical adaptation. Like, this is kind of tough, but I don't know if it would fly today. But for some reason, with all the interesting characters and nuttiness of it, what about Caddyshack, the musical?
I like that.
I could totally see that.
Who's going to tackle that, you know? Yeah. It's like it's got all the characters you love from Oklahoma and more. You know,
that would be good. This is a, you know, this is somebody else's IP, but I think you should get a cut of it if it happens. So
no doubt. Yeah, I want to trademark that, the Caddyshack musical.
Dun dun I dun like dun, that.
Dun. Right.
Have you looked and seen if anyone's considering it? Have
no, I just it just hit me it like just, a thunderbolt.
Because you never, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, you never know. It may already be in the works.
The original movie has all those Kenny Loggins, like has a Kenny Loggins theme song.
Oh, that's true.
You can imagine like Kenny Loggins contributing to the original score and everything. This could be a real winner. I mean, they've already adapted Footloose, so this is not so far off. All right, Aaron, what do you got?
Fight Club. I want to see Fight Club as a musical. Yeah, well, I told you I like dark. So
yeah.
I like that. And Fight Club is definitely dark. And I think
you're not your fucking khakis or what you have in the bank.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
In the face.
So this does beg the question, though, because you had brought up last week that you didn't think Brad Pitt was dark enough to play the JD character. And yet, Fight Club, there
he
goes.
Yeah. He was very dark in that.
Yeah, I mean, as Tyler Durden, he might as well be JD in this movie, quite honestly. I think he had it in him. They just didn't see it at the time. They saw him as a pretty boy. So he shook that. I think as he got older, he was able to shake some of the pretty boy out of him, and Fight Club might have been the first real demonstration of that.
What about 12 Monkeys?
Yeah.
To digress.
12 Monkeys was the bridge.
Yeah.
That was the bridge to this.
That was his entree into...
Yeah, I feel like, for Brad Pitt to play a guy in high school, I think too much of the boy next door would have come out in a high school role. I feel like you got to put him in a basement, punching the crap out of people.
Yeah, he needed to grow into his ruggedness. He definitely needed to grow out of the pretty boy look. The movie I would adapt, and it's an older film. It's a film from the 50s. It's a Vincent Price horror film, but horror in quotation marks, called The Tingler. And it would just be such an interesting musical. It's a film that was by William Castle. And one of the things they did in real life, William Castle was one of those guys that did all the stunts. And during live shows, he would have the seats wired. So at some point during the film, the tingler's supposed to get loose in the theater you're in, and somebody's seat was wired to go off so they would scream every episode. But to me, doing that live in a theater would be amazing. Like you'd have the
Oh
tingler and
gosh.
have the seat wired and people would be singing. And I think you'd stage the audience with more of that interactive stuff. So to me, that type of film would make this an amazing theater experience.
Well,
About
wait, going back to mine. No, because I just Googled. I have something to add on mine. I Googled and it's because I'm like, well, maybe I wonder if maybe because you never know, maybe it is
Fight Club
going
the
to be
Musical.
Fight Club the Musical. But actually it's back, it looks like it hasn't happened. But back in 2015, the Wall Street Journal reported that it was under discussion. They actually were discussing it. And listen to this, guys. Okay, Trent Reznor was gonna do the music. Is
Brilliant.
that awesome?
It's
And now you're
Ian
spoiled.
Fincher
That would
working.
be awesome that he would write the score. But yeah, apparently it was gonna be a rock opera. But yeah, that was 2015. So who knows? Maybe it'll still happen.
Now that we've just rewatched Heathers, how does it hold up? What are your thoughts? I know you picked it, so let's just jump right in. What do you
Yeah, well, okay, so I enjoyed it. I had a great time watching it. I mean, I just loved it. I loved everything. I just it kept me entertained from beginning to end. As far as holding up, that's a tough thing. Let me just first talk about the things I loved. Of course, you know, I already talked about how, you know, he wrote his own slang. Daniel Waters wrote his own slang. He wanted it. And we talked a lot of bit about that. And I love that. And the way she's like, I got a motor. Although I feel like I got a motor. I don't know. I feel like I heard that before, but maybe I thought I heard it before, but that's actually where it came from. There were so many different things. You know, you have we talked a little bit about you know, it's so very, that was kind of like the predecessor to something being extra, or now you say it's giving sort of that it's very, it's so very. Yeah, I love that part of it. I love the fashion was just, I do remember wearing literally, I don't think I paired blazers with it, but sort of those little skirty short things with tights and flats. Oh my, I totally wore that for a while. Scrunchie. I mean, they open the movie with a scrunchie. It's just like I still wear scrunchies. That's just a staple. Scrunchies will always be part of my life. I Winona Ryder's just so cool. She's just so cool in this, and I think she's hilarious because she isn't even trying to be, and it's so funny. I love how like there's a point, you know, Christian Slater and the guy who plays his dad, they have the weirdest interactions. It's just very odd. And she was just like, and it becomes apparent that his father actually he owns a construction business and he demolitions buildings, and his father's actually demolishing these buildings with people inside that he doesn't like, so he's a killer. And when this is revealed, she just looks at him and she's like, "Do you like your father?" And it was just like, I mean, it's just so many moments. So just, I
I haven't
really
thought of
loved it. I just thought it was great. Does it hold up? It's really hard. There's a lot of moments I would see it be very, it would could be very hard to make this movie today. It just the with the teenage suicide, just making so much light of that. Especially, and we're in this post-Columbine world with, you know, very early on, Christian Slater pulls out a gun and shoots blanks at two of the other characters in the cafeteria. Like, yeah, that moment, you know, definitely, you just it just cr made me cringe because, you know, nowadays that's something that. I don't know how the musical is treating that. There was also a excuse me. There was a television series that came out, and they actually put that on hold when the Parkland shooting occurred. So, yeah, there's a lot to consider. There's a lot of themes there, that have to be treated much differently today. So I'm not sure about how it holds up.
talk about sign of the times, swatches and shoulder pads and scrunchies
Right?
for sure. One of the lines, there was a line when they're in the snappy, crappy, quick mart place, and
Mark.
Christian Slater throws out this line where everyone's life's got static, which is so funny to me because like we don't have static anymore in between the radio stations and the changing the channels and all that. So I was like, wow, that's funny. Like I can't remember like the last time I heard static, you know, or like what that meant. And like what really stood out for me was like the whole out of touch Gen X thing. The parents have no fucking clue, you know, and yeah, the Columbine stuff and all that, it was like watching it then, I remember like, oh, that's so ridiculous, someone pulling a gun out or wanting to blow up the school. But now it's like, whoa. Watching Heathers, it's like all that stuff of the 80s about who we wanted to be in the 80s and me and being cool and all that. It's like it threw up in the form of Heathers, and it's like the underbelly, the shitty side of the yay, hooray, let's have fun 80s and all that. Like, I mean, in Christian Slater's speech at the end about like different social groups not getting along, it was just like a little
Right.
over the top, like ham-handed, like message. But ultimately, at the very end, it's the same exact message that you get from watching Breakfast Club, just arrived at in a very different way. And I agree. I
In a
love how like
twisted
that
way.
dark, edgy, like almost alternate reality. You have to remember, like, well, this is a satire. You know, everyone's like so ridiculous, you know, and how, but like it's showing like how disgusting that me, you know, more for me. And you see that when they all like there's that shot when they at the first funeral and they you hear the inner thoughts of each character as they're like standing over the body. It's really all about themselves.
Yeah.
How this benefits or doesn't benefit me, as opposed to actual, like there's no empathy, you know, people are disposable, you know?
Right.
And I think that's sort of a thing that actually still holds up today, you know, that's
Right,
being
right.
mindful of, you know?
And Shannon Doherty just steps in and
Yeah.
becomes the next Heather. Well, she is a Heather, but you know, and she says at one point, Veronica, which is Winona Ryder's character, says at one point, you know, I cut off the head of one Heather, and another one grew in its place. And yeah, and the realization that no matter, you can kill off all these people, and this shit is still going to exist. It doesn't matter.
It's and there's a
Which
shot,
is
and
why
here's
Christian Slater at the end wants to just kill everybody. So.
Yeah, it's never gonna, and it's a
Everybody
sick.
out.
So it's as much of it's sort of weird and sign of the times and out there. It's still, I think the message is still like a thing. But
Right,
you know,
right.
there was this shot. There was a quick shot where like Winona Ryder saves the day, right? And she peeks out, you know, into the gym, you know, and she's
Right.
all, you know, or
Covered in
saves,
soot and
covered
yeah.
in soot, and they show a shot of the cheerleaders while the principal's talking, and it's a quick shot. And I don't know about you, but to me, I immediately thought of the Smells Like Teen Spirit video, which is
Yeah,
like a very dark, like.
There's a shot that I think is a reference. I think there's also
Yeah.
a shot of them stamping their feet that was used in the video, quite honestly. I think that's a, when they did Smells Like Teen Spirit, there's definitely reference to Heathers in that video for sure.
Absolutely.
Deliberate. There is something really unsettling about the adults in this movie, and they really do take the piss out of the hippie generation in particular. That idea when we were growing up, like, everybody had this idealistic view of, oh, our parents, they were the hippie generation, they went to Woodstock. And this movie was the first time I remember the piss being just directly taken out of that, being like, that kumbaya stuff is bullshit. And I was
Yeah.
like, yes, that's what spoke to me about the way
Those
this movie.
boomers were a bunch of self-involved assholes. Look what they did to me.
Yeah, pretty
there's a
much.
kumbaya
Why am I
reference in
smoking these
the.
things? Because you're an idiot. Like the rinse wash repeat of the bullshit surface interactions with the adults, you know.
Yeah, there's actually a reference to Heather Chandler when she comes back for the funeral, and she shows up. She says, my afterlife is so boring. If I have to sing Kumbaya one more time.
Yep.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, it's, I mean, there's as a ton of great lines. I do find it interesting. There is one moment that I was like, the mom oddly came through with something that was, she says something about, you know, when human or when teenagers complain about wanting to be treated like a human being, it's usually because they're being treated like human beings. And I thought it was a strange moment that they gave an adult who the adults are generally ridiculed in most of the movie. And that was kind of a interesting that they gave her that line, because I think it was kind of, you know, had
Open to
some
interpretation
like,
too. Like, you should be
yeah.
glad you're being treated like shit because that's the reality, or you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Get over it. Get just do it.
Yeah, I mean, the dialogue in this movie, there's so, it's, you could it really, it's really amazing. I mean, I just think he did an amazing job with
Aaron,
the
you just made me,
dialogue, and I can,
when you brought up the Kumbaya line, like, remember
yeah.
Christian Slater's big, you know, ham-handed speech about the only place at the end, the only place all these different groups can get along is in heaven.
His plea to the afterlife. So there's a couple things that I think are make this movie stand apart, but also make it, I don't know if challenging is the right word. And I think, Aaron, you hit at some of this at the beginning. Because it's satire, there's points at which you wonder, is it, do you give it a wider berth? Like today, we would definitely treat issues of teen suicide and conversations around it with a little more of a sensitive touch and a little more awareness of how, you know, how prevalent like cases of suicide can trigger, you know, in media can trigger other behaviors and so forth. So we've gotten more sensitive to that, but there's also issues in the movie that I think it happened. And then the question is, are they just reflection of their time? Or are they comments on the things? And so the two that really stood out to me were like how rapey all of the boys were. All of the men were very rapey. Even JD, right? When she pulls away from him immediately, the first thing he tries to do to convince her, like, no, you still love me, is he starts like molesting her to get her to cooperate and to coincide. So he's just as bad as those people. And then the other question is what we would observe is sort of casual homophobia, which is to say it observes the casual homophobia, but does it also participate in it? Like use of the, you know, they use the word fag a lot. They talk about like there's jokes that are, you know, the mineral water joke in particular is especially interesting.
I love my son. I love my dead gay son.
And the, but then the joke is, like, would he say that if he had a limp wrist with a pulse? So is that a cheap joke about gay people, though? Is that a cheap gay joke, or is he actually like pointing out the irony of the situation? And it threads the needle. I want to give it more credit than it might deserve, but I feel like that casual homophobia is a reflection on the time as much as commentary on that situation, like commentary on how toxic masculinity has just, you know, infiltrated schools.
Right. Yeah. I went back and forth on that. Yeah. Because I definitely am in that place where I want to give it more credit than it might deserve, because I kind of looked at it and I'm like, okay, well, the way the homophobia is treated in this, it's almost like they're the people who are homophobic are they're the people that they have disdain for. They're the people that they're already ridiculing. They're the people. So, and therefore they're ridiculing the homophobia. They're pointing out, well, you're the idiots who believe this. So we can trick you into thinking this happened because this is how your mind, you know, so I feel like that's the credit. I want to give it credit for being actually a criticism of homophobia, but I may not be in the place to decide that. I don't know.
I love the moment when Christian Slater meets the two assholes and he's like, did your boyfriend da 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 when you moved here? And he was like, there's an open door policy for assholes. So it's sort of like Christian Slater is like, you know, he's calling out the homophobia right off the bat, but you know, that's a quick fleeting moment. But I gotta tell you, like thinking back and being in a fraternity in college, like that whole like sort of like get laid almost rapey culture was like okay. It was like cool, and homophobia was cool. In fact, like I'm thinking back to like the sort of fight songs we'd sing at the fraternity were like absolutely horrible, rapey lyric things. And we didn't think anything of it till we were like started looking at it at the time. But like,
I love the scene where she early on when she's in the frat house and the guy, she's like, I have a speech for guys like you, which is great. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, save your speeches from Malcolm X. That was just like one of the great lines. Again, he's such a douche. Like, and so, and again, the college guys get away scot-free, quite honestly. That's what triggers the rest of the incident in the story. But the college guys are who they are.
I love how he's like, I love talking to high school girls because I don't have to ask what your major is. And then he goes, and
when
he's
you go
like,
to college,
so what are you going to study when you get to college? Her agent did not want her to take this part. Her
really?
Agent begged her, from what I read, begged her not to take this part. So
yeah, a lot of actors turned it
suicide
down.
Not to, yeah, not to, but no pun intended, but yeah, so, and yeah, and she, but she took it. And, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, and like I said, it flopped. So it was considered, I mean, $170,000 for the first opening weekend is considered a flop. And then it was ran for 5 weeks and went to video. So it premiered at Sundance in January of 1989. So that was 20 years before I attended my first Sundance. That was back when, going to video was not an honor. It was not. That meant you were done.
I think the real challenge for this movie was that it was, the reason it probably didn't do well financially, it came out through, it didn't get the proper release. In other words, it was an independent, and the movie company that released it did what's called a platform release, but apparently they didn't put the marketing behind it, and they were going bankrupt. So New World Pictures acquired it, and so it really did find its life, like so many movies ultimately did on video. But it's public, like its reception was very good. Like it got good reviews. And so like not everybody loved it, but I remember, and this is why I distinctly remember, in art houses, it was doing well, but it didn't make a ton of money because they platformed. It only played select theaters. So it couldn't gain the critical mass to be a success. So it was like too small to make money, but it was the kind of movie that we'd see today and think it should make a lot of money. It should do a lot better than it did.
Well, it's almost like John Hughes and John Waters had a baby and it was this movie, you know? And I almost feel like it does a better job of the message than something like The Breakfast Club because of those extremes that it goes to. You have to go to extremes to show the truth of the mirror of the society, et cetera, et cetera. But because I think it was like, wait a minute, I see, we have to jump into this sort of satire farce world to get going on the train of the message of this movie. I don't know what I'm saying.
The extreme always seems to make an impression. That's what he says. JD says it.
The other thing that stood out to me this time about JD, and again, I think this is our modern sensibility looking back on it, he's a fucking stalker from the beginning. Like he shows up many times uninvited. Like the first time he shows up to her house, he comes through her bedroom window.
Yes.
Like he's a fucking stalker from the beginning. And then when she escapes the date, when they're cow tipping, he was stalking her. He was following her on the date. That's how he knew she was there, right? He pulls up in the motorcycle, and it only took her maybe halfway through the movie to figure that part out. Like even when she runs into him casually,
at
the Quickie Mart. Is that a coincidence or did he crack her there, right? He's always where she is. So he was clocking her and zeroed in on that.
He says, you'll be back. You'll be back. Which is, Mark the psycho.
Wait a minute. Gabe, you just hit on something, a theory here. Perhaps there is no JD.
Oh, no, this is Fight Club thing. No, this is not. That's
bullshit. it's her alternate personality.
Don't spoil Fight Club for the people who have it. So the thing about cow tipping, and I say what you will, cow tipping isn't real. And it's one of those Mandela effect things. People are convinced it exists, but it's not real. Like nobody actually does cow tipping.
You couldn't tip a cow over.
No, you can't. Cows.
They had way too easy a time of doing that.
You can look it up.
Yeah, I grew up in Central Pennsylvania, and I literally have never been cow tipping before, nor do I know anyone who's ever been cow tipping. And there was a lot of cows where I was.
Some of the things I think are really interesting about this movie, just artistically, like regardless of what one thinks about the subject matter, there's like a few really great production design things. I love how each of the Heathers and ultimately Veronica all have their own color scheme. So you have the red, green, yellow, and blue. And then it's played out through both the croquet set, but also their bedroom design. And it goes all the way down to, if you were wanting to be a true detective, for example, that what kills the first Heather is, let's go with Big Blue. But Winona's Big Blue, like her character is Blue, right? So that would be the trigger if somebody wanted to solve the crime. If Sherlock Holmes were on the case, he would have cracked it because he would have recognized the blue is what gave her away. But the production design is impeccable throughout this whole movie. There's a lot of really just really well done stuff, even to the like at the funeral, if you remember, after the montage, when Heather comes back and she uses holy water to straighten her hair. Like, those types of things are just gorgeous. Like, that is all really, really smart.
So we talked about this, when we introduced during the Shining episode, at the end of the Shining episode, we talked about the fact that Daniel Waters wanted the screenwriter. He wrote Heathers when he was 23 and he wanted Stanley Kubrick to direct. He specifically wrote it like with that intention, and was not able to get Stanley Kubrick to pay any attention to it. So, and so basically, I think this was maybe like first time effort for Michael Lehman, who was a USC film grad, and like they had a mutual friend in common. And I think that's how it all went down. But anyway, I for one, am glad. What do you guys think if this had been a Kubrick film? Like, what do you think that would have looked like? Do you think that would have worked? Do you think, oh, I'm sure you guys would have loved it even more. And now why am I even asking? Go for it.
What have David Lynch done with it?
David Lynch, he did Twin Peaks, so he's been in high school. I think we know what it might have looked like. True. It would have been creepier. I feel like he has weird ideas about sexuality, and I think this shows up in a lot of movies. Yes. So my I wonder would have been able to pull this off without going deeper into like trying to do the teen sex comedy thing. I think he would have leaned more into that as well, but that would take away from the humor. So I think this film does a very good job of skirting that issue, unintended perhaps. So like there's one scene, for example, where the cops who are played for a complete joke, there's one kind of punchline, like, are the kids naked? That's the one scene that's played. And even that is the cops are played almost like Keystone Cops. There's a scene where he's chasing him, got the gun out, like pointing with both directions, like he's a mall cop. So there is that sense of how inept the police are. But the teen sex comedy part, that's the closest it gets, I feel. So yeah, I think Cooper would have been a total miss on this, and I think it's smart for him to have not even touched the script.
And it's almost like too, and like thinking back, remembering, like you're almost rooting for the whole like you know, it's this whole, the whole motif or symbolism of this fast food culture. And I want to set, you know, I want it my way and I want it now, kind of American, you know, twisted, dark underbelly of the American dream. And you can have it all if you just win this or you do that or wear this or buy that. Christian Slater is like a rich kid too, actually. You realize like, you take him like, oh, he's sort of a vagabond kind of guy, but no, he's choosing to be like, fuck you to the whole.
Yeah, and no, he's not like the Judd Nelson character in Breakfast Club. He's not that character.
He's putting it on. Yeah, and he's driving a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got the name Jay Dean, right? He's supposed to be like James Dean. Yeah,
Jason clearly. Dean.
The names of the characters are all very specific, by the way, which I think is very clever in the writing. I don't know if you noticed this. So, for example, Winona Ryder's character is called Veronica Sawyer. And her best friend from childhood is named Betty Finn. So last name is Sawyer and Finn, but their first name is also Veronica and Betty. So they're meant to be friends together, both Tom Sawyer and Archie Comics.
Oh, one note on that, on Betty Finn. That is Renee Estevez.
Yeah, Emilio and Charlie Sheen.
Emilio,
sister. That I did an episode of JAG with.
To me, the biggest revelation about this movie is the one where every time you think, okay, they've made commentary about high school, but the real observation was that even after they've made the observation that, yes, these people are homophobic, yes, these people are date rapey, yes, these people are terrible, that the change happens anyway, that Heather is just replaced by another Heather, that the system persists. And so it's that sense that they've entered a world in which irony is no longer ironic. Like, it's ironic about itself, and therefore it shows you exactly what it is. It's to me, that's the revelation of the movie, that it, in a way, that a John Hughes movie is earnest, and says like, yes, we're the Breakfast Club, we stand together. The lesson of this movie is more like, yeah, this happened, and then the kids were still assholes afterwards. Like,
yeah, the cynicism.
I don't know if I agree with that.
If what, you know, the kids are still assholes. What don't you agree with?
The way the movie goes, like, Winona just straight up like takes over as the alpha Heather, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But you get the sense that she's going to change the Heather.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Because
Right.
the what's the closing shot is her old childhood friend going
No,
around her in her orbit.
Yeah, she's not going to go. But she technically, if you follow the logic of what she's done, she's like, we're not going to prom. Like, I hear you're not going to prom. Let's go home and watch a movie. So
yeah.
she's withdrawing from the system. The system's going to go on without her. JD is technically right that in order to destroy the system, you have to blow it up completely. She can't win. She's telling her, hey, let's go home and watch movies instead. She's just withdrawing from the system. I don't think she's actually going to change it. I don't think that being a new sheriff means anything because, as you pointed out at the first funeral, you get inside everybody's head and they're all self-indulgent. The one guy wants early admission to Princeton. The other guy wants this thing. And he keeps saying, hey, make sure you send this video of us doing the Kumbaya moment to Princeton. Like, I don't think her saving the school from getting blown up changes their fate. I think they are still
so
going to believe
you can't affect change, just retreat from it and wait out the storm as the rest of society eats itself alive.
I think the movie is cynical. I think it's meant
oh,
to be
God.
Cynical. It is very, yes, it is. Yes.
But I think
very
that's what
cynical.
Makes it like the ultimate postmodern movie.
Yeah.
Great choice. Coming up, we'll give Heather's official Gen X rating. And we'll announce our next film.
Greetings and salutations, future stars. Do you dream of having a career like the one and only Jack Nicholson? Well, if imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, prepare to blow smoke right up the pale moonlight of Uncle Jack's butt crack. Welcome to Faux Nicholson Academy of Acting, where you can master all the catchphrases and mannerisms of Hollywood's coolest Laker fan. At the Faux Nicholson Academy, you'll learn how to deliver lines with an iconic smirk, a devil-may-care attitude, and of course, how to choreograph your eyebrows that do more talking than the cast of Entourage. Can you handle the truth? Our expert instructors will guide you through every freaking step of Nicholson's freaking method. Enroll now at Faux Nicholson's Academy of Acting, and we'll stop making you want to be a better man and make you a better man.
Welcome back to Rated Gen X. Now's the time when we rate the movie. Aaron, what do you give Heathers?
Gosh, I'm so unprepared. Oh, can someone else go? Can I have someone
How
else
many,
go?
Do you want to give it some varies? Do you want to give it some damages?
Damage.
I know. That's true. It is. Yeah, I'm just going to give it. It's just very. Do I need to give it a number of varies? Can I just say it's very?
I don't know. I guess with nowadays, like, movies are so almost like production wise perfected and smooth. And you watch some of these older movies and they're still kind of rough around the edges in some ways, but that's what makes them so great. My one, and as much as the message of the movie was great and all that, it's not 100% perfect for me because I thought it was a little bit too ham-handed with pushing the message instead of letting the audience find it on their own. So I would give it a 4 out of 5 corn dogs.
I think I'm going to go with 4.5 slushies. I'm going to knock it off a 0.5 point just for shits and giggles. But I really quite enjoyed it. I think the memorable lines put it over the top. The performances are really terrific. So yeah, 4.5 slushies. Curtis, what?
What?
It's your turn to pick our next movie.
So, you know, with all like my brain's been hurting and thinking about all the my experiences in Hollywood that never seem to really end, I want to pick To Live and Die in L.A.
I will confess,
remember it.
I have neither lived nor died in L.A., nor have I seen the film.
With Willem Dafoe, a young Willem Dafoe as the villain.
I also have not.
But I remember, yeah, I just remember like stylistically it really hitting me like the way Michael Mann stuff kind of would, you know, a little bit of that vibe. But I just remember it always, and I have the soundtrack. I used to listen to it on my tape player all the time.
I love that. I love, like, for me, it's a maiden voyage, so I only know what I've heard about it and thought over the years. I never saw it, so for me, it's like cold viewing, which is going to be great.
Lots of Wang Chung on that soundtrack.
Yes, yeah, we will definitely have
Buddy
to
Wang Chung tonight.
But he's got a Wang Chung tonight.
So now we just need to wrap up the final bit and say, until next time.
Oh, right. And who does that?
I don't know.
Any of us. Let's read them out. Read out the credits.
See, here's the thing. We have such a problem with this. Well, that was, goodbyes are so hard. Yeah. Aaron O'Reilly, I prefer the Irish goodbye. I just walk out of the room.
Hey, Pop. Introduce me to your Rated Gen X friends. It's written, performed, and produced by Gabe Wardell, Aaron O'Reilly, and Curtis Eames. Post-production by Gabe Wardell. Oh, and by the way, the Rockin' Jams are by Ryan Thomas Johnson. Also, if you like Rated Gen X, Pop, you tell a friend, wouldn't you? Come on, Pop, be a boomer and send an email to hello@ratedgenxpod.com. To listen to Aaron's So Very mixtape inspired by Heather's, visit the show notes on ratedgenxpod.com. Thank you for listening to Rated Gen X. This hereby concludes our broadcasting day.
Right.
And it's in a corn dog.
In a nutshell. But there is no cow tipping.